Rockland, their TK, K and 1 are all on an AM/PM. Their 2, 3 are on some other model, and then their 4 through 8 are on an AB, and then their high schools are on a block. So the unfortunate thing with that is, for us, is we have no control over what the high school's going to do with their schedule when they come back. So we will have children on different schedules no matter what. I, to say that we wouldn't, it would be a lie. I mean, they're gonna be on different schedules if they have kids at the high school and on our system or whatever. So that's a long-winded way to answer your question is, yes, we could easily have a AM/PM model at a school and an AB model at a different school, with the understanding that if a parent has a child, let's just use Wheatland L and Bear River as an example. If a parent has a child at Wheatland L and they're on an AM/PM model, and they have a second child at Bear River and they're on an AB model, they would be on different models. It's not life altering, but it is something that is a consideration. The question really is, where on the scope of decision making does having children that are in the same household on the same schedule fall? If it's the top priority, then you would never do it. But if your top priority is looking at what's ideal in an unideal situation, looking what's ideal for your primary grades versus your middle school grades, then you very well could make the decision that for primary grades, AM/PM model seems more appropriate than it may seem for a middle school or a high school.
Well, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the teachers and other people that have contacted all of us to give us your input, because it's important that we know that and know how you feel. So thank you.
What other questions the board have, if any? So direction on moving forward on the waiver, I'm pretty much seeing that we need to move forward on the waiver. So if that's the direction of the board, then that's my plan at this point. We will definitely have to have continued conversations about what does it look like in a model of AM/PM. I think we can absolutely talk about it tonight. I'm sure that the people on Zoom are going to want to talk about some of that. However, I think it's a little preemptive since the parent survey doesn't close till Sunday, because you need all the input. And a survey is only as good as what you want to make out of it. It's not a vote. I'm not voting for this. It's a preference. And so we have indicated the preferences of what the staff says, and we've indicated tonight what the preferences are of the parents that have voted so far, or I keep saying voted and it's not, the parents who have filled out the survey, what their preferences are. And you know, the question is always is, when you go, okay, we all know, everybody who has been involved in this pandemic in the education field knows, no matter what we decide, we will have people who do not like the decision. It doesn't matter what model you go with. I even said yesterday to somebody that, well, once we get all kids back all day long, people are going to be happy with that. Well, the answer to that is no, because we're still going to have those people who say, I don't care about half day, full day. I'm not bringing my kids back until X happens. So no matter where we go, we're going to have some unhappy people. What the survey tries to do is give information to show what is the input from those specific groups, and then you can make your decisions accordingly. So the transportation, just to kind of put a nail in that one, is parents are going to have to understand that we cannot social distance on a bus. We even know in schools, the requirement to wear a mask is third grade and above, and second grade and below, it's highly recommended but not required. If you're going to ride the bus, you're going to wear a mask, because we're going to have two people to a seat, most likely. We're not going to put three to a seat. We're going to, but with it's, I mean, given the numbers of people that are going to drive their own children, we may not have to worry too much about that. But buses, what Dr. Liu has told me in our conversations about transportation, because some districts, they're just not doing transportation, except for their special ed students, because they're in cities where they can walk, you know, Rockland is walking to school or whatever. I told Dr. Liu, yeah, they can't walk from Smartsville. They can't walk from the lake. We have to run our buses. What her thing was is, we understand you cannot social distance. What I would tell you, whether it's 110 degrees out or 32 degrees out, drive your buses with your windows open. So that's probably the biggest way of, plus we're going to have the spray things that will help clean, but having kids wash their hands before they get on buses, about having them wash their hands when they get off the bus, in the classroom, go to the bathroom, all of those things are all important for this pandemic, and will likely help with the flu issue as well, if they continue to do
so
that.
So we're not doing temperatures on the bus, you said, correct?
So I do have thermometers purchased for the buses, and we are doing, so let me answer that question in a way that, for special education, where we pick up a child at a house, we will take their temperature before they get on the bus. Because if they have a temperature, we can tell the parent, sorry, but
right.
Johnny's not coming today.
Right. And at a bus stop.
Okay. At a bus stop, if we have 20 kids out there, we are not taking their temperature as they get on the bus. Because A, we will not have time to do that at every bus stop. And B, we are not leaving any children. I don't care if they're eighth graders. I'm not allowing the buses to leave children on the side of a road at any point.
Now, do they have to hand sanitize before they get on the bus? Or?
We will have hand sanitizer that they will come in the bus and spray their hands, yes. Okay. And again, they will be required to wear a mask even if they're a five-year-old.
So I know that one of the communications I got from a teacher was about the time it was going to take to do all the pre-stuff in the morning. We will have extra staff, I would assume, since we're not having after school and that kind of stuff, that can help, I don't know, squirt the stuff in the kids' hands, take temperatures, get them, so there's not a loss of a 25-minute period in the morning. Is that correct, or?
Well, that, certainly not 25 minutes. I would say that because they would only have half, no matter what model we go with, they'll only have half their students, which in a large classroom of four or five would mean 15 to 16 kids. Taking their temperature as they walk through, that shouldn't take 5 minutes, right? So I don't understand the 25 minute thing.
Okay.
I also think that depending on the model that is picked, so for example, if we do an AM PM model at one or all sites, they're there for 3 hours. We're not doing recesses, which is one of the other areas that students would have to go out, wash their hands, you know, before they came in. They're there for 3 hours. They don't need to have a 15-minute break within that three-hour period. With both models, it would be my desire to set up the schedule so that children are not eating at school. They are picking up their lunch as they leave. So if you're on an AM PM, the AM kids are picking up their lunch, or it's right outside their room as they're walking out, they grab their lunch and they take that home to eat at home. The PM students, day one, will have to eat at home before they come to school. And after that, they will get the next day's breakfast and lunch. When they leave at 3 o'clock, they will grab that, and then they will be expected to eat their breakfast and lunch before they come to school. On an AB model, we would give, it would be similar to the PM or the AM. You would give it a lunch and breakfast to the students as they left, and then that would be their lunch for that day and their breakfast for the next morning, and then it's on a continual cycle.
No, but AB, they would be there longer during the day, wouldn't they?
Potentially, yes.
So they wouldn't eat at school?
Well, so speaking from my perspective, spending a half an hour for them to eat lunch, to then come back in
and leave,
and then leave, makes no sense, right? So we would end the day and have them take their lunch and go home. Because the thing about the AB model, so just talking a little bit about the AM, PM, and the AB model, the AM, PM model is going to require students to come to school for 3 hours a day and then have independent work for whatever period of time the teacher assigns that, and that's grade level specific. A TKer may only have 10 minutes of independent work, where a fifth grader may have an hour to an hour and a half. I would not go beyond that. It just doesn't make any sense to give a child 6 hours, 3 hours of class time and 3 hours of homework. You'll lose all the children. I think the key for everybody to understand, especially our fantastic teaching staff, is you will not be able to do everything that you did when we have children full time. We have to wrap our heads around the fact that this is not normal. So what we would expect of our staff is to do the best job that they can given the time allotted for the students in their classroom.
And I think that's a huge point right there, because I know teachers are, their own mental health and their stress level, because I think we have such great teaching staff that they are trying to get everything done that they normally do in that amount of time. And they're going to drive themselves crazy if they're not already, trying to put their head around it. But when I look at kind of like the AB or the AM/PM model, I would see the kids get what they get, and then it would be like normal homework, like a kindergartner take home and has to practice writing their letters or whatever. I would assume it would be their normal homework, not, like you said, another, 3 hours days worth of, yeah. It would be just their normal homework, is what I was assuming. Am I correct in assuming?
Well,
that?
Yes, I think that the AM/PM model, the children are gonna come to school for 3 hours and they're gonna have some independent work. And it may involve using a computer, it may not involve using a computer, it depends on the grade level. But they are not going to have any distance learning requirement. Because, well, depending on the AM/PM model, if they're there 5 days a week, they're not going to have any distance learning. There are other AM/PM models that they're not there 5 days a week. And so on the day that they're not there, then they would have to have some distance learning. Here's what the law says, is that they are not looking at minutes this year for students. They are looking at contact days. We have to have contact with students either on our campuses or through distance learning for 180 days. There is no exceptions to that rule. But you don't have to have contact for 6 hours a day for 180 days. It is contact. And so what that looks like is something that we have to continue to build into what the schedule will look like. So moving on from the AM/PM, the AB model would be something. There's all kinds of AB models, but if you look at, we had talked about a Tuesday, Thursday, and a Wednesday, Friday thing. But really, I think given some of the input that the teachers have given and other things that I've seen, an AB model where you have A's coming to school Monday, Tuesday, and B's coming to school Thursday, Friday, and Wednesday being all of them on distance learning, as well as time for teachers to do the thing that they need to do that's outside of instruction. And I think that the one thing that we need to make sure that we keep in our minds as we're making these decisions about what a schedule will look like is teachers don't just teach children. They are required to do engagement logs. They are required to plan. They're required to do interventions. They're required to contact parents. They're required to contact students. They have staff meetings. There's a litany of other things that teachers have to do. And so we cannot take up their entire day or their entire week with just teaching, because there's no time for them to do those other auxiliary things that are required. They're not, I'll do it when I want to, right? They are something that they're going to have to do. So as we think through this, that's part of making that decision of what does it look like. So in an AB model, let's just go with the Monday, Tuesday are your A kids and your Thursday, Friday are your B kids. If your A kids are going to school on Monday and Tuesday, when they leave school to go home, the teacher will have a requirement to have distance learning with your B kids. So they will have to have time in the afternoon to be able to connect with the B kids. I hate AB, so let's do blue, white. Let's not do that either. So the other children will have to be connected with. On Wednesday, you have to connect with all of them if they're not in school. And then on campus. And then on Thursday, Friday, the B children are in school and the A children are now going to be connected with in the afternoon. Now you go to some of the other models that are around right now. My sister-in-law is a teacher in Rockland. She teaches sixth grade. They do an AB model where their students on odd weeks, their A students go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and the other students go Wednesday, Friday. And then the next week, the first students go Tuesday, Thursday, and the students go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So they're getting 5 days in 2 weeks. It's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare, not only for the teachers, but it's a nightmare for parents because there's not a lot of consistency there. And there, remember, because of the state's expectation that all children would be taught on a daily basis, any child that you're not connecting with in the classroom is now going to have to be in distance learning. So one of the districts that I talked to, what they're doing, which again, I think a teacher would pull their hair out, but they are teaching. So I have my children here, and I have my children on Zoom every day. And I'm teaching on my computer as if the children aren't really in the classroom. They're all on their computers, and the kids on Zoom are on their computers, so that everybody is getting taught the same lesson at the same time. And then the next day, those children that were here now are the ones that are at home on the Zoom, and those ones that were at home are now coming in on their computer.
In class Zoom.
Oh, yeah. The other piece that I've seen that is better than that, but still difficult, is that a district has invested in cameras in the classroom. And so as the teacher is teaching to the students that are in the classroom, the students that are on Zoom are watching the lesson through Zoom. The biggest problem I see with that, to be honest with you, is that the teacher is going to be concentrating on teaching, and the students on Zoom, you almost need a second adult, right? You would need another adult monitoring Zoom Otherwise, you've got all these shenanigans going on Zoom while the teacher is teaching. And there's no way, I don't care how good
the
teacher is, there's no way they can monitor the students in the classroom as well as monitor the students on Zoom. So as you can see, there are a litany of ways to make this happen, none of which are fantastic. I will tell you also, just to, because I did talk to one of the teacher today about this, because they asked about what happens when you go in red. Because right now, with the waiver, we can only bring back TK through 5, so 6 through 8 still on distance learning, they're still marching down the distance learning path. If we go on red, and we've been on red for 2 weeks, now we can bring back 6 through 8. And so the question was, when we're on red, do we still have the same restrictions that we had when we were on a waiver? And that is a fantastic question that I don't know anybody who has the answer to that yet. So you take Placer County. Placer County involves a whole lot more districts than Yuba County. You have the Rockland model, you have the Roseville model, you have the Roseville High School model, and then you have Western Placer. And there's a whole lot of other ones. So their Placer County is on red. They can bring all their students back through 12th grade. Rockland has chosen, as I told you, kind of a litany of different models based on grade levels. Roseville High School has picked their model. Roseville City Schools, which is their elementary, has picked their model. Western Placer has said, we've read the guidelines, and the guidelines say, if possible, social distance. We are saying it is not possible to teach the children the way we want to teach them in social distance, so we're bringing them all back. So starting October 6th, Lincoln, Western Placer, is bringing back their students 100% all day long. Masks, yes. Social distancing, no. So we'll see if.
Is that all grade levels?
All grade levels.
Even like TK and first grade?
Whatever their normal day would be. Not everybody has a full day kindergarten or full day TK like we do. So whatever. I don't know what Lincoln's day looks like for those little younger kids, but district wide. So they did a survey. You can go on their website and look at it. They did a survey asking parents, full day, hybrid model, stay home on distance learning. And I don't have the percentages exactly, but it was like 90% of the parents responding said, put them back full day. And then a very small percentage said hybrid, and then an even smaller, it might have actually been a little bit larger to stay on distance learning than the hybrid. So they're taking that and running with it. Now, whether or not they're going to get away with that, I don't know. But they're saying that's the way they interpret the guidelines, and they brought it through their attorneys, and their health officer in Placer County, for most of you probably know this, quit.
Right.
So they don't even have a health officer to oversee how that's all going to take place. So that's kind of where we're at. We have to make some very hard decisions here very shortly about what does our model look like, and we need to make a decision that will not only work for our waiver, but work for when we go into red, so that we're not saying, well, you were on distance learning for this 4 weeks, now you're going to go on this, and until we can go fully, we don't want to change the middle one. We don't want to say, well, we're going to do AM, PM now, but when middle school comes back, we're going to switch everybody over to AB. We can't do that to parents, or to teachers, or to everybody else, the students. So we have to make a decision about what plan we're going to put in place at the sites, and how is that going to work. Now, if you go solely, go back to Ish's question, if you go solely based on staff input, it would lead you down the path that we should do AM, PM at Wheatland Allen Lone Tree, and we should do an AB model at Bear River. Understanding That means that we'll have kids that are on different models. However, if you go on to the current parent results, that would tell you we should do AM, PM everywhere. So it's just a matter of how you decide to do that. AM, PM for middle school is difficult at best. I've talked to Ange about this. I know the teachers have been involved in it, but my belief in AM, PM in middle school is you would do something like three periods of some subject. I'm just going to use math and science and elective. And they come in AM, PM, and they all get their math on site, their science on site, and their elective on site. And then if you're an AM child, you go home, and in the PM, your ELA teacher is still distance learning. Your PE teacher is still distance learning, and your social science teacher is still distance learning. So then you get your other periods in the afternoon through distance learning. That's about the only way an AM, PM is going to work for a middle school. There's probably other options, but trying to figure those out. So what that would do is you would have, using language arts, for example, you would have your language arts 6th, 7th, 8th grade teachers doing distance learning with half the kids in the morning and distance learning with the other half in the afternoon, while the social science teacher would be doing, or math teacher would be distance or regular learning all day. So some would stay on distance and some would stay in class. Now, why did I pick the subjects? Because I'll probably be held to it later, is I just grabbed them. But I do fully believe that there are some subjects that are more inclined for distance learning than others. Woodshop or ag, not really a distance learning thing, right? So why wouldn't we look at maybe having those on site? ELA maybe is okay distance learning, right? I don't know. I mean, we would leave that to the staff over at the middle school to figure that out. But on an AMPM model, then you would have all the teachers there, and then all the teachers would be teaching groups of children, and then they would all be responsible for an hour or so of distance learning in the afternoon. So that is another option. So I'm going to shut up.
I have a question about the waiver.
Okay.
Because I called you to ask you if it was an action item, and it's an information item. So if we're not voting on the waiver, how are we putting it forward?
The waiver does not take board approval.
Okay.
So the waiver, now I'm not one of those superintendents that I'm going to do whatever I want and I don't care what the board says. I will submit the waiver on the board's behalf based on the conversation that we have tonight. It does not take action from the board. What will take action is when we bring the kids back. So the date that it comes, the children come back, what schedule we're going to put the children on, that will come back to you on board action. But applying for the waiver doesn't take that. It just like it doesn't take approval from anybody. We have to consult with different groups, but there's no approval process other than Dr. Liu approves it or doesn't, based on what you've written.
And then we have to fine tune how we're going to proceed.
We definitely need to fine tune. Well, I don't know that we need to fine tune the waiver piece. We need to fine tune the reopening.
Well, that's what
plan.
I was talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think the waiver is going to get approved?
Oh, absolutely.
I was going to say that's a no-brainer.
Well, I don't know that it's a no-brainer, but I will tell you that I've seen the other waivers that have got approved, and they're like 4 pages long, and ours is like 15 pages long, because I hit every single item so that they can't say no. So would she call and say, hey, maybe you need to add in X? Yeah, she could do that. But I have no doubt in my mind that we will get approved It's just a matter of when. Because the way they're doing it is based on when you turn your waiver in is where you are on the reading list. And Dr. Liu's not just sitting around waiting for waivers to come in, right? She has a big job, especially right now. So there's 9 waivers that have gone in so far. So if we were the next to go in, which we won't be, but if we were, we'd be number 10. And I think they've approved 3 so far. So I will tell you that all of the school districts that have applied for the waivers to date are single school districts, a charter schools, or parochial private schools. There have been no districts that have multiple schools in their district that have applied for the waiver yet. And I think 6 of the 9 are on the Sutter County side, and 3 of the 9 are on our side. The 3 on our side are 2 charters and Camptonville that has 45 children. So those are the 3 on our side of the river. The other side, they were all charters, and Franklin, who's a K-8, Markham, Illinois, is a K-8, Browns, and New Estero, I think, are the other ones. And then the other ones. The other thing is that St. Isidore's applied for the waiver, but they didn't wait for the results. They already have children back. So I guess in a private school, you can do what you want to do. I don't know. We can't, you know, people say to me, well, why don't you just do it anyways? And if we were a private school, we would say, no problem, as long as our parents are behind it, because they're paying the bills. But if we do something that is not allowable by the government, they will take away our funding. And I don't want to be in that meeting when we tell everybody, guess what, you're not getting paid because we have no funding. So we have to follow the rules.
Kind of the position that I'm in my business.
Yeah.
People are coming to me all the time. Well, why aren't you open? They're open. They're open. They're open. Because I got to follow the rules.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe open the chat if there's anything that people want to comment on or ask. I'm going to move over here so I can read them.
There's really nothing so far.
Sound is terrible. Sounds like you're underwater. Paula, we are underwater. We've been underwater since February. Screen share, I thought we did.
I think she means individual screens.
Now, can you screen share so we can see it?
That was at 4:10. Very early on, yeah.
Okay. Chad wants to know if you're recording it.
Yep.
Robin wants to know about screen sharing. Okay. We didn't screen share? Robin, unmute yourself, please.
That's what Chad was saying, huh?
It wasn't screen shared.
No, Craig. It was not. And I don't know. We didn't
How
get
rude.
It. So.
How rude of us.
I couldn't screen share.
We saw it here on the screen.
Right.
Yeah, but it didn't go out to, it didn't work for some reason.
Oh, well.
Interesting. So Heather asked, on the waiver, you state no testing is required. Can you elaborate? What type of testing? Are you talking about COVID testing, Heather?
Yeah, I think you had mentioned on there that, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. In the state that they had mandated, it said that there needed to be periodic testing. And in your waiver, you said that we weren't going to be doing that.
So currently, when I say we aren't, we can't currently do it because the test is not available. So Dr. Liu had said that there's the testing that the state's talking about, the every 2 months or every month testing where you send all your staff in to be tested, that the test for that is not accurate. So we are not going to be held to that requirement until the test is fixed. However, if somebody has symptoms of COVID, then yes, we would ask that they be tested. Does that answer the question?
So which test are you saying isn't accurate?
The I don't have it in front of me, but it's called like a. Did I write it in there?
Are you talking about the rapid test?
No, I'm not. Do you know what the name of it? It's like surveillance testing. So that's the surveillance. Thank you, Angela. The surveillance testing, according to Dr. Liu, and again, that we take our direction from our county health department. She said it is not available here in Yuba County, and that they do not believe at this point that the surveillance testing is accurate enough to force individuals to do that. However, I was on a Zoom today with superintendents throughout the state of California, and there are some districts that are implementing it. And so we have another meeting with Dr. Liu on Monday where that question will be asked again. But right now, unless you have symptoms, there's no test that, I mean, they still want you to go get tested because they want people that don't have symptoms to go get tested because it brings down our positivity rate. So understand the way that they go, the way you move from purple to red, or red to orange, or orange to hallelujah. I don't know what the last number is, but yellow. Okay, so as you move, it's not just how many cases of COVID that you have in your county, but it's also your positivity rate. So if the people that are going to get tested are only those who have it, then our positivity rate is too high. And so therefore we can't even know, we might have seven positives, which would get us low enough on that side if our positivity rate is at 15%, because we're not having enough non-positive people tested, then we still can't get out of red. They look at both indicators.
Next slide, Melissa Moore.
Okay, Melissa, can I speak to the letter I submitted? Yes, please, Melissa.
All right, thank you. I just want to start by saying, I have the utmost respect for everybody on this Zoom because we are all in the same boat. So kudos to absolutely everyone. I did send a letter, and in my letter, I spoke to the AB model for our site at Bear River. And I just kind of wanted to explain some of the reasoning, some of the numbers, and kind of what we were thinking and where they came from. For us, for our four fives, the AB we felt would be more beneficial because we would actually get more quality minutes with them. When I looked at the AM PM and we really started to think about how long does it actually take to get kids in a seat, COVID or no COVID, it takes a minimum of 10 to 15 minutes to get your class started. Whether you're taking temperatures, kids are not arriving on time. So really and truly, and that's in every day, every model, no matter what. So that's kind of where that 15 minute came from. And then, you know, we only have them then for what, 2 hours, 45 minutes. And at some point, let's be honest, all kids, K5, K8, K12, 3 hours is a very long time to sit. So whether it's an outside recess and in the classroom break, regardless of what that looks like, you've got to have breaks in there. Absolutely. And so the actual instructional minutes are not necessarily going to be, I have you for 3 hours to teach my lessons. And right now I have them on Zoom for 3 hours. Is it effective? Absolutely not. Not exactly what I want to do. But if I have them for a little bit longer, I can do a little bit more. And with the AM PM, there's zero opportunity for us to check in with them on what they're having a hard time with. Because 30 minutes after they're done, the next group comes in, there is no additional contact. There is no intervention time. There's none of that. And that's something that, especially missing so many months last year, starting the way we are now, that's something that I think is going to be invaluable. And I can't speak to everyone, but I can say for us on our site, our kids utilize that 1 hour check-in time on a daily basis. I get to spend some time and actually help them with what they need. If I am just pushing, I don't feel like I'm gonna get that from them. Now, does that mean that what I want or what I need is gonna work for everyone? Absolutely not. If I was a kindergarten, first grade, second grade teacher, I'm sure I would be way over here on this side fighting for that, because I know as a teacher, that's what would be best for my kids. So recognizing that what's best for one school site may not be what's best for the other, that makes me feel really good. So are we going to be okay with whatever is decided? Absolutely. We're going to make the best of what we have. And I appreciate the responses I got from the board members. I do appreciate it, and from Craig and from everybody else. So yeah, I think that's kind of the thought process behind it.
Appreciate that. I will say that that whatever model there is, that time that you're talking about, let's say it's a half an hour of time, so you would drop the 3 hours to 2.5 hours, you'd have to do that same math on your AV model, so your 4 hour day would become a 3.5 hour day. So there is still the same kind of problem with any kind of shortened day that is going to lower the number of minutes. It's not exactly what the schedule says, 3 hours. We know that it's not going to be 3 hours of complete instruction, just like if it's 4 hours or 5 hours, it's not going to be exactly that amount.
And the other piece that was in there that I just want to make sure also kind of got to me was my students who go to the Learning Center, like how do I get them into my general ed classroom when I'm pushing just reading and just math and trying to find that balance? And so when we're talking about this, I mean, open to ideas, suggestions on how to make sure that they get to integrate with us as well, because I think that's a huge piece coming back on campus, and I don't want them to feel segregated because they have to spend all of their time getting their special education minutes.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Melissa, and one that we will have to continue to delve into, because there's different options for that, but none of them are great like they would be if we had all the children back. So, but it's definitely something that needs to be on the radar, because they can't spend their entire time in the Learning Center and not integrate with their regular class. Then we've just created SDC classes for all of our special ed kids that's not what their IEP says. So,
right.
And not good for them. So, all right. So, Elaine, where did I get the information from Western Placer going back full in person? So I was told that. I have a friend who works in Western Placer who told me about it. I went on their website. If you go on Western Placer Unified School District and you click on their reopening plan and look at their parent survey, within the body of their reopening plan, it talks about coming back October 6th with all students in attendance. So Annette says, I thought Western Placer was going half days according to the letter sent to parents. I don't know how long of a day they're going. My understanding, and I'm happy if you can find that I'm wrong, my understanding in the discussion and what I read last week is that they are having all 20 of their students in their classroom for whatever period of time that is, which could be a half day. And then I did not see that. So Jenna says 8 to 12:30. So again, I mean, we could talk till we're blue in the face about Western Placer. It doesn't impact us on our decisions. It was just a point I was making that when you go into red, there are some districts that are choosing to read the rules or the guidelines differently than other districts. When will scheduling be decided? It will be decided next week.
Craig, I've got some stuff to share too.
Okay.
Should I move?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it'll never come up.
Okay. That's good stuff.
Yeah. You might have to speak loud. But
okay. I'm Angela Wolf, and I am not only going to speak to you guys from the district nurse perspective, but also from a parent's perspective of an elementary student, as well as a parent of a medically fragile child. And what I'm going to start off doing is I'm going to start and read some little excerpts from articles that are for medical professionals and that are kind of data-driven, evidence-based driven. So the first article that I'm going to share from is from the CDC, The Importance of Reopening American Schools. So aside from a child's home, no other setting has been more influential on a child's health and well-being than their school. The in-person school environment does the following. Provides educational instruction, supports the development of social and emotional skills, creates a safe environment for learning, addresses nutritional needs, and facilitates physical activity. Scientific studies suggest that COVID-19 transmission among children in schools may be low. International studies that have assessed how readily COVID-19 spreads in schools also reveals low rates of transmission when community transmission is low. Based on current data, the rate of infection among younger school children and from students to teachers has been low, especially if proper precautions are followed. There have also been few reports of children being the primary source of COVID-19 transmission among family members. This is consistent with data from both virus and antibody testing, suggesting that children are not the primary drivers of COVID-19 spread in schools or in the community. Extended school closure is harmful to children. It can lead to severe hearing loss, severe learning loss, and the need for in-person instruction is particularly important for students with heightened behavioral needs. Important social interactions that facilitate the development of critical social and emotional skills are greatly curtailed or limited when students are not physically in school. Additionally, extended closures can be harmful to children's mental health and can increase the likelihood that children engage in unhealthy behaviors. An environment where students feel safe and connected, such as a school, is associated with lower levels of depression, thoughts about suicide, social anxiety, and sexual activity, as well as higher levels of self-esteem and more adaptive use of free time. Further, a review of studies conducted on pandemics found a strong association between length of quarantine and post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, avoidance behavior, and anger. Another review published this year found that post-traumatic stress scores of children and parents in quarantine were 4 times higher than those not. In-person schooling provides children with access to a variety of mental health and social services, including speech, language therapy, and physical and occupational therapy to help the physical, psychological, and academic well-being of the child. Further, school counselors are trained in mental health needs of children and youth and can recognize the signs of trauma that primary caregivers are less able to see because they themselves are experiencing the same family stresses. Safety. Extended school closures deprive children who live in unsafe homes and neighborhoods of an important layer of protection from neglect, as well as physical, sexual, and emotional maltreatment and abuse. A 2018 Department of Health and Human Services report found that teachers and other educational staff were responsible for more than 1/5 of all reported child abuse cases, more than any other category of reporter. During the COVID-19 school closures, however, there has been a sharp decline in reports of suspected maltreatment, but tragically, a notable increase in evidence of abuse when children are seen for services. For example, the Washington, D.C. Child and Family Services Agency recorded a 62% decrease in child abuse reporting calls between mid-March and April of 2020 compared to that same time period in 2019, but saw a more severe presentation of child abuse cases in emergency rooms. Nutrition. For children from low-income families, school meals are an especially critical source of affordable, healthy foods. Physical activity. The loss of opportunities of physical activity from school closures, especially when coupled with potentially diminished nutrition, can be particularly harmful for children. Physical inactivity and poor nutrition among children are major risk factors of childhood obesity and other chronic health conditions. From another report, for children and adolescents with mental health needs, such closures mean a lack of access to resources they usually have through schools. In a survey by the Mind Health charity Young Minds, which included over 2,100 participants, 83% said the pandemic had made their conditions worse. But importantly noted, school routines are important coping mechanisms for young people with mental health issues. Another study states, families with younger children reported poorer mental and behavioral health than those with older children,
about 10% of all parents said both they and their children's mental and behavioral health has worsened. The pandemic may have worsened their behavior because of challenges in accessing both office and school-based mental health services during school closure. And then if we get into some vision, excess time being on tablets, gadgets, computers, contributing to the exacerbation of myopias, which are nearsightedness. And not apart from the myopias, excessive screen time also increases the risk of other adverse health outcomes, including digital eye strain, mental illness, and musculoskeletal problems. And last but not least, talks about vision again. Too much exposure to the blue light emitted from gadgets may cause adverse effects on their visual health. Digital devices produce high energy visible light in the form of blue rays. They can easily enter your children's eyes, increasing the risk of developing eye problems. Computer vision syndrome, more popularly known as digital eye strain, is one of the conditions often linked with excessive gadget use. Computer vision syndrome is the visual discomfort you or your kids experience after watching TV or using gadgets for an extended time. Your eyes may feel sore, heavy, and tired. This may also be accompanied by headaches, nausea, and dry eyes. So I just wanted to bring some of those other things I know that are not just strictly academic, and just thinking of the whole well-being of our children. I believe that the AM/PM model is going to be better because there will be more hours of access for our children for resources, for counselors, psychologists, learning centers, and special education services. And you're comparing, you know, about 15 hours a week to 8 to 10 hours per week. On the AM/PM schedule, they would have live in-person instruction daily, social interaction daily, the availability of in-person services, and then it would also take out the stress of the distance learning portion for these families, mine included, where we could just do the AM/PM. Kids have been behind the screens for way too long. We need to give these kids back some structure and normalcy. Give them as much opportunity as possible, not to only learn academically, but socially and emotionally as well. And I personally believe we're going to see a significant increase in behavioral and mental health concerns that will need to be addressed, and getting these kids back on campus as much as we can, and providing those services to them is, you know, I just feel it's super important. So thank you for listening to all my articles. I know I took a little bit of time, but I kind of wanted to address the not just the academics for these students, but the whole health.
Thank you for taking the time to research.
My granddaughters are using the blue light glasses. Mm-hmm. What do you know about those?
I'm not super familiar with them, but I have seen that they are deflecting that blue light emission that's coming through. But I've also heard that it's not covered by insurances. I've known some people who have done that for their children who wear glasses, but it's not cheap.
Now, Angela, you said you have a medically fragile student?
Yes. So I have a type 1 diabetic daughter, and she is in preschool right now, and she's, you know, the half days in person. And when me and my husband made that decision, it was because we were looking at her whole health, her emotional well-being, her social well-being, not just her education, just kind of as a whole, we felt it was more important for her to be able to be in those environments versus keeping her at home.
And the structure and the routine, the every day that she knows she's getting it. Today's meant, you know, not like, oh, what am I, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's what I see of families that, okay, you know, Johnny's going to school every day and I only get to go every other day, and, you know, I really appreciate all of your research, because there are so many components, and I'm sure the rest of you, I have gotten tear-jerking emails and text messages from parents that I know, people I know, and the one that stands out the most is the mom who said, I was never a screamer, and I lost it, and I threw a glass across my kitchen and shattered it because I couldn't get my child to focus with the teacher. And I'm not that kind of mom, but I lost it. And what if I lose it next time with my child? And so when you talk about taking away the distance learning from the families, to me, I'm just like, you know, I've had several, and I don't know how many of you have, but I just start bawling because I know these people, and I can only imagine the stress of trying to get your kids to focus at that young age. And so I appreciate all your research. It really, it's eye-opening too.
Thank you, Angela. So moving back to the questions, it looks like we have one more at this point. What is the plan for high-risk members or those who care for high-risk in a waiver model? So there are leaves available through contractual obligations. There's leaves available through COVID. The truth of the matter is, I think that everybody who would qualify under one of these high-risk areas that you're describing would need to meet with the district at some point if they haven't already. Well, they would need to do it again because we'd be moving into having students on campus. And we would work with those individual employees to see what we can do to accommodate their needs. However, understand that if they are based in a job in which it requires that students return and they cannot return with students, then we need to look at all the legal leaves available for that individual. Or if we had room on our independent study program, or we went to an AB model that had some teachers teaching distance learning, there's a lots of ors, but right now, if you are a teacher and you need to return to the classroom and you cannot, then we need to have that conversation. Looking for any other questions coming through? I'm gonna leave it open for a little bit. See if there's anything else the board would like to ask. And okay, so we have another question. The model that is chosen to return to under the waiver will remain when we move to the red tier, correct? Yes. At what tier would or could scheduling change again to more full-time or full capacity? Okay, so again, I'm pretty sure under the orange tier that we can come back full time. I'm going to continue to push the envelope to find out what in a red tier time would allow students to come back fully. Right now, I do not believe that under a red tier they can come back fully. But as I said, I believe there are some that are pushing that envelope. But you have to get out of red into orange before currently you can consider bringing all students back. And it may not be, it's still bringing all students back, but with specific guidelines such as masks and all those different things. It's not until you get to the yellow tier that life is back to somewhat normal. Red, you still have to stay in cohorts and not mix. I don't know if that's a question or if that's a statement, but I can tell you that the high schools are not doing that. They are not cohorting their children. In the high schools that I'm aware of, the kids are moving from class to class. Or at least that's the plan. They may not have started yet. Under the waiver, absolutely. And under what I believe Red says is, you're right, Heather, you need to remain cohorts, but I will tell you that I know of high schools that are not doing that because they cannot set up a schedule for their children, their students to not interact with other students.
You missed Robin Lovenoff right here.
Robin, is AM/PM model is chosen, will more bus drivers be needed? Will bus buses providing hotspots be utilized. So we only have one bus currently that's using that's providing a hotspot. It is a special ed bus. It is not a large bus. We would, if we had to social distance on the bus, we would do one of two things. We would have to hire more bus drivers and buy more buses, which is not in the budget, or we would have to not allow transportation to and from. Transportation to and from school is not a requirement of a school district. However, we all know if we don't provide it for some of our students, they will not come. So I did talk about transportation earlier. I'm not sure if you were on at that point, Robin, but according to Dr. Liu, she understands that we need to transport children. She understands that we cannot social distance. Just to give you an example, in our district alone, if we transported the same number of students that we transported prior to the pandemic, we would need 60 additional buses to have no more than 15 kids on a bus. So it is undoable, and she knows that. So we would put children on a bus with masks required. We would lower the windows as she's recommended, and we would drive our children to and from. And those parents who chose not to get on the bus would have to get their students to and from. And in the survey itself, it says that two-thirds of the parents that responded to the survey are looking to take their children to and from.
But Craig, yes. If we have students at like Camp Far West that need a ride and they're in the AM, and then we have to take them back out home, and then we have to pick up PM, so we're doing double trips.
We are doing double trips in the AM.
More buses is what I'm saying.
No, it's
we more time bus driving.
No, our bus drivers are paid more time on the road. Yes.
Okay.
More additional costs. No, our bus drivers are 8-hour employees. The key to an AM PM transportation model would be in your outlying areas, such as Smartsville and maybe out by the lake. You would set all of your children in those neighborhoods up on the same model or the same AM or PM. So you would then only make one trip out to Smartsville and one trip back, or one trip out to Camp Far West or back. And then your in-town kids would be on different models because you can get through that quicker.
Yeah.
Mr. Merchant, it's jumping. I think the application said a start date of October 12th. Do you really think it could go through that quickly? No, it's October 19th would be my best guess. I put on the application October 12th because I filled out the application and did the math last week, but it will change before I turn it in. It has to be a minimum of 2 weeks from the date in which you turn in the application. And given the fact that people turned in their application the Friday before, last and haven't heard yet, the 2 weeks is really a 3 week, in my opinion. The way the application goes is I will send a copy of the application to the County Office of Education. They will look at it, put their matrix to it, and then send back with any suggestions. Then it goes to Dr. Liu, who then will read them when she has time in order, and she does not give it to anybody else. She is the one who reads them. So whenever you get on the docket for her to read yours, once she has approved, then it goes to the state, to the California Department of Health, for their approval, and their turnaround is a minimum of 3 days. So you can see that this process is not decide today, start tomorrow. Will Lake kids have to share the bus again with high school students when they open up? When the high school opens up, so the high school is not going to be opening up under the waiver. If we get to red, Lisa, I'll have to get back to you on that. I think we can transport all of our students by ourselves and not have the high school, and they would have to transfer all of theirs. What we've had in the past is an agreement with the high school so that we're not making multiple trips out to, not both of us going out to Smartsville and not both of us going out to the lake. We've split those routes up, but we're not in normal circumstances, so we will see how that works out. But I will get back to you, Lisa, once we get closer to knowing that the high school, when the high school is ready to come back. The high school, according to what they told me yesterday, is they are doing an A-B model when they can come back. Can you scroll that back down, because April's long one just took away those. Keep going down. Okay, thank you. So, and that says, to clarify, once the district opens for whichever model is chosen, the students requiring attend face-to-face instruction, if parents do not want their children to return to school yet, they would have to sign up for our independent study program. Once we bring children back under a waiver program, we will not have a separate distance learning program. We do not have the staff for that, so they would need to sign up. Unless we had 20 second graders that pulled a teacher out of having to teach class, but that's not going to happen. So they would have to sign up for our home-based independent study program.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Speaking as a primary teacher, I cannot stress the importance of consistency for younger students. The AMPM model and being in class daily is extremely important. I know you will pick the model that best fits the needs of all students, but I encourage the board to think of younger students. If the AB model is chosen, our younger students will be at home 3 days a week. I can't even wrap my head around how to manage this academically. Will we be given a schedule for teaching the AB groups? So I'm not sure what the last question is. Will we be given a schedule? If for some reason that we do go with an AB model at Lone Tree, since this is coming from a Lone Tree teacher, then it would be the teacher and Jody's responsibility to split your class up on who comes on A's and who comes on B's. The district is not going to randomly do that because there are some of you, in fact, I received a comment the other day from a teacher that says, look, I already know my kids through Zoom, and I want to be able to pick which ones are AM and which ones are PM. And hey, by all means, we would look at having the input of the staff to make that happen. What I will tell you, that no matter what plan we pick, we are going to have, again, those parents who said, well, I wanted AM, PM, but really I only wanted AM, and they're on PM. Some people are going to be on PM, half the students, if we go with that model. We'll have the same issue with the AB model. I want my kid going Monday and Tuesday, and you put them on Thursday and Friday. We're going to have those situations. We will accommodate as best we can, but knowing that we did away with PM preschool because we never had enough signups for afternoon preschool, we're going to run into an issue with, no matter what model we go with parents saying, but these are the only times or these are the only days that work for me. So, Judy, okay, I agree with April on AM, PM would work best for my 3-4 students. So, one, Judy, you're teaching a combo class. To me, an AM, PM model for a combo class seems pretty, if it's an even split, seems pretty nice, because you could have your third graders at one point and your fourth graders at another. But you could do the same thing with an AB. You could have your third graders on these 2 days and your fourth graders. So for a split, either model tends itself to be able to split your kids that way versus some other way. Just an observation. I appreciate the thought of the AM/PM model that will work best for your 3-4. So as you can tell, everybody that's still on the Zoom, we have a very, very large split in what people think is best. And we knew that. We knew that was going to be the case. And we are going to make some decisions soon regarding the model, which we're going to put in place, and then we're going to run with it. And we, going back to what Melissa said, I know some of you won't be happy with whatever the decision is, but I know professionally you're all going to move forward with whatever that decision is.
I have a question.
Okay, Heather.
If you choose AM/PM, how's that going to really work for when you come back from middle school? Because we don't have a prep period, and in our contract we have prep period. There's so many other factors that it figures in for the middle school that an AM/PM would create a whole ton of nightmares. So yes, I agree that the K through 2 probably are going to work better for an AM/PM, but you did say that it is a possibility that we could do different schedules at the school. So I just encourage to really think out the middle school, because it seems like we're going to be coming back quickly too, to think about the scheduling for all grade levels.
Yes, I agree. And I did say we can look at different schedules for different school sites. I do not believe we should look at a different schedule within a school site. But I suppose that's a possibility as well. I know that the AB model adapts better to a middle school than an AM/PM, but I also know an AM/PM model could be adapted to work at a middle school, as I explained with, and that would also allow some of the people that, if they're high risk, to still be distance learning teachers. So that the AB model would not allow for that. So those are other considerations as well. Thank you, April, for clarifying. Your question is referring to an academic schedule on how to handle AB model, similar to the schedule that you were given in distance learning or distance. Yes. So when we put the schedule together, we will look at what that will look like. I need everybody to wrap their head around the fact that nothing is going to be normal. You have to not put an expectation on yourself that you're going to get through every chapter of your ELA book and every chapter of all of your other cores and do that with this, whatever model is picked. So the expectation that things are going to be the same, you have to get that from your head. You want to make sure that what you're doing is the best you can do, given the time that you have, just like you're doing now with distance learning. And I know distance learning for some people is working fairly well, and other people are pulling their hair out, and they can't wait to get their students back. So I just need to just keep reminding you that you're not going to be able to do what you did when you had kids fully in any of these hybrid models to the extent that you're going to be able to teach them everything. It is, Paula, it is important to realize that one size fits all is unrealistic. Not a truer statement I have heard in a very long time, and I appreciate that. You sent that to me earlier.
Yes,
and
that was a great, great
It is absolutely true. So if you look at the possibility of having the middle school or Bear River, for example, on a different schedule than Wheatlandell and Lone Tree, the biggest detriment to that is that parents could have children on two different schedules. That is the same exact thing that would happen if you had a preschooler and a kid in regular class, they would be on a different schedule. If you had a student at Wheatland Elementary School District and a student at the high school, they could potentially be on different schedules. So where does that decision for those parents that have multiple children in different grade levels or different school sites play on the decision tier? For me, it's not as high as making sure that we are doing the best we can for all students, knowing that it's unrealistic to think that what's good for a TK kid is the same thing that's good for an eighth grade kid. So thank you, Paula, again for that. I mean, I can remember 100 years ago when my children were young, and one was at a middle school and one was at a high school in the same district, and they didn't have the same schedule, right? So we all adapt to whatever that schedule is going to be, and we work accordingly, so.
Well, they're not going to have the same schedule now because you've got kids coming in on waiver and some kids are staying home, so.
Absolutely correct. And both schedules, when you move into a all come back model, adapt right to that, right? Whether it's an AB or an AM PM, their day is going to be extended on an AM PM and they're going to come back more days on an AB once we get to have students back fully. How will paraeducator hours change under an AM/PM model to allow both groups the benefit from two adults in the classroom? Okay, so that's a great question, and there I've thought about that one a couple of different ways. Number one, you have half your students, so that helps a little bit. We could either move the para hours to be the ending portion of an AM and the beginning portion of a PM, or we just have to figure out budgetarily how we increase the budget to pay for paras to be at both, or we use some of our other auxiliary staff that we have hired that aren't doing things elsewhere and they become a second para for you. It would be a different person, but it would be. We have people on the payroll right now that are, their jobs are not happening. So they're doing other things. So they could easily fall into that. Okay, so Shelley, Brenda, I would love to see my kids every day, and I know we will all have concerns, and this is not an easy time to make a plan. The one thing I would really like to see put into place in some time to plan and update grades. My grades don't get updated until the weekend if I'm lucky. Yeah, and so please take into consideration the teachers trying to plan the entire new way of teaching, no matter what plan. Yeah, so I think I talked on that earlier, Shelley, but I'll reiterate it. I think whatever plan, We need everybody to understand that teaching isn't just all about instruction time with children. There's a whole lot of other things that teachers are required to do, such as grading, conferencing, calling parents when the child is not performing, working on interventions, all of these other things that happen outside of the regular classroom that we need to account for during the decision-making process of what schedule to go with. Will the care room still be in place? It is our expectation right now that we will continue to have care for our staff's children if they are having to teach at a time in which their children are not in their classroom. So I guess the easiest way to say that is it would be nice for the CARE program only if we put all of the staff children on the same schedule, so that if we have an AM/PM model at Wheatland-L, all the children at Wheatland Elementary that belong to staff would be AM kids, for an example, and that we would only have to then provide care in the afternoon PM time, or vice versa, PM, and then we'd have to provide care in the AM time. If it were an AB model, it would be nice to be able to have the children on either the A or the B of all the staff members, so that we did not have to run the care program 5 days a week. Is that realistic? I have no idea, but it is our plan and our expectation to continue to have care available for our employees. How many students will be allowed to do independent learning? We currently have, Peter, how many do we have on the list? How many slots have we paid for?
We're at 90. 90 slots.
Given the survey, if 50 of those left and went on back into the classroom, that would open up 50 more slots. Any slots beyond that we have to pay for, so we would have to look at how many that would be, Annette, and decide whether or not fiscally that's a responsible thing for us to do. But I do not think that we're going to get much over the 90 spots that we would have. So we do have 90 spots, they are all taken, but.
Yeah, I was just asking.
Based on the survey, at least half of them are planning on coming back.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that we're hearing it from our side, that I think, you know, we have quite, most of our families that have contacted me are ready to come back in some way, shape, or form for their children to come back. I know the children, I talk with them at the youth center and a lot, and throughout the different areas on the base, and a lot of the kids just really miss their teachers. One of the little boys said that what really broke my heart today was one of the little boys said that he had a teacher that retired up at Lone Tree, and he was out sick before COVID hit, and when it hit and closed school, he couldn't return to school the next week. So he missed her and never got to say goodbye, is what he said. And so I hear these stories all the time, and it breaks my heart. I know the connection that the kids have with the staff. I know the staff are amazing. Jody's amazing, Tara, everyone's amazing. So I just wanted to say that we're working really hard with our youth center, who have quite a few of the kids who are doing the virtual learning, and they've set up so much. I have to give kudos to our youth center staff who aren't teachers, that have really just connected and learned the schedules and tried to learn all the programs that are there to help the kids get on. And we invite you guys to come out and kind of check out that all the board members, if you want to pop in, you know, just to kind of see what's really going on, and, you know, just see what the So that's just my little spill on it, but they've done a great job, and I appreciate, anybody that wants to come and just peek in.
Is Passon ID finally open, Annette?
Yes! Yay! That's why I'm excited.
Thank you, Annette.
Yep.
So, Jenna, will there be a period of time between the waiver being approved and the children coming back? What does the time frame look like? That's a good question. I do not know how long it will take for the waiver to get approved. I'm assuming there will be significant time. I don't know. I mean, the reality of it is yes, we have to give people some sort of warning that we're switching over. We are not going to say to the teaching staff on Friday that, guess what, on Monday, the children will be back. We will definitely have to build that into the plan. So Although it sounds like many of you are working weekends anyway, so no, I'm just kidding. It won't, there's no way it's going to be like that. We're going to give you time to get organized and be ready. What is the maximum capacity of a cohort in the primary grades? So the maximum capacity is based on the size of your room and how many students that you can fit within the social distancing. We did some measurements at Wheatland L, and we believe no more than 16, at the max 18 at one time. But based on class sizes, if our classes are at 24 in the primary grades, it should be an even split of 12-12. So it is really based on the size of the room. Kim, thank you. We appreciate everything you guys are doing as well. I'm going to give it a couple more minutes, and if I don't see anything come through, then we're going to move off into closed session. I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight and asking questions and listening. This is a tough time for everybody. It doesn't matter who you are in education, whether you're a student, a parent, a teacher, an administrator, a board member, a classified employee, it doesn't matter who you are. This is a very difficult time in this business. Yeah. And we're going to continue to do the best we can to educate our students and keep everybody as safe as we can and give people the ability to get the job done under excruciating circumstances. So just know that I can't say it again, you cannot have the expectation that you're going to be able to get everything done that you did before until we get them all back. So. Thank you, Annette. Okay, seeing nothing else coming through, as always, my door is always open. My email is always available. My text messages are always returned promptly, unless you text me at 4 in the morning. It might take a few minutes, but please.
And ours are as well.
Board members are as well. If you have any questions or any other things that you would like to add, please send them our way.
And I'm just going to throw out there, a lot of you teachers that are on right now took last Friday off because I saw you talking about what you were doing, and that made me so happy that you guys disconnected for a little while and took your Friday to either watch a movie or do whatever you guys were doing. And so it made me happy to see that on Facebook. So make sure you take that time to disconnect.
And just to clarify, she's not saying you took the day off. She's saying that
night off. Okay, not the day, the evening off to disconnect. I'm sorry. You know, I just had surgery, medications, you know. No, but I liked seeing, you know, that people were doing, just saying, I need a break, and the things that they were doing, and I thought, good for them, you know, disconnect for a little bit, because this is just too much, the stress, the mental health portion of it. And so I really enjoyed watching what you guys were all doing. So kudos to you for disconnecting on Friday evening after you worked hard all day.
Well, I think, you know, last but not least, when we go, we're going to go into closed session, but we talked, Angela read a lot about the mental health of children, and we do need to remember that we have mental health issues for adults as well. I can't even think the last time that many of us have disconnected in some manner for any portion of time. and not continually thought about what next, how is this going to change, what are we doing here, what's that. So I do encourage everybody to do that. I can't walk the talk because I don't seem to be able to do it. But I just think that give yourselves a pat on the back, man. This is just a very difficult time to be in life. And we understand the mental health that you're dealing with as well, trying to, I mean, Annette said that that student didn't get to say goodbye to the teacher that retired. I know you all remember this, but none of you got to say goodbye, right? Because the students you were told on a Sunday that we were not back in school on Monday. So you went from a connection on Friday to a computer connection a week or so later. So that's stressful for people.
That's right.
No matter what people say, the adults feel it just as much as the children do.
Right.
All right, guys, well, we're going to end the meeting. Please stay in contact if you need any questions. Thank you all for coming, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you.
Let's hear that gavel, Captain.